2SER's Arts and Culture Show.
Don't make me say it's so hot right now.
Tan caliente ahora!
Your weekly dose of arts and culture.
And all of that sort of stuff.
It's that weird thing that they're classics because they're classics because they're classics, and then they become the classics and everyone wants to do the classics because they're classics.
He's amazing.
Well, you need a lot of room for all that blood.
And he's hot as a firecracker.
You're listening to So Hot Right Now. You better not use me saying that.
Amazing babes.
On 2SER 107.3.
Hello, hello. It's Sophie. I'm back from my little break, but so good to be back in the So Hot Right Now chair. This is your weekly dose of arts and culture right here on 2SER. And boy, do we have a doozy for you. Today, we're going to be chatting about a new musical drama, self-described as the most controversial musical drama since Cats. Well, that's true. Well, we'll see. It's called Tyranno. We're going to be chatting with the co-writers, producers and directors all about that. Also, Tali Aladia will be dropping in for a bit of gaggle of geeking as we chat the biggest weekend in all geek, in the whole geek calendar, which is San Diego Comic-Con. And if you're feeling, you know, you feel like you need a bit of a chill Sunday, well, Sunday Serenade presented by the Sydney Symphony will be happening at the Casula Powerhouse Museum. We're going to be chatting to a couple of the orchestral musicians there. But coming up first, though, we've heard news of the biggest bush doof in Erskineville is just around the corner. And then we're going to be chatting all about what that entails up next. But first, here's a tune from Jamie XX. It's Loud Places featuring Romy from his excellent 2016 solo album, In Colour. You're in 2SER.
I go to loud places to search for someone to be quiet with, who will take me home. You go to loud places to find someone who will take you higher than I took you. Didn't I take you to higher places you can't reach without?
that there was Jamie XX with Loud Places featuring Romy. You're right here on So Hot Right Now, your weekly dose of arts and culture. So Hot Right Now favourite PAX Salon is back next week with their latest edition, The Wild Things, curated by James Nguyen and Digby Webster. For those of you who don't know about PAX Salon, it is essentially a captivating evening of art, performance, sound and dance, all put together by artists or a group of artists. For The Wild Things, this dynamic duo of artists will explore the diversity of our experiences, imaginations and fantasies. Here to tell us more is Digby and James. Good morning.
Morning.
How are you going?
We're okay for a Saturday morning.
You sound great. You sound great. So where did The Wild Things, where did the title come from?
Yeah. So we were actually looking through some of Digby's books and old like archives and things, and we've found this book of that his friend made.
Yeah, well, it's my old friend from New Temple, and she wrote a book for my mum, and it's called Love and Monsters. And we thought, instead of saying Love and Monsters, they call it Wild Things.
And
so what part of the book are you encapsulating in this show?
I want to capture some monsters and go wild. Really.
That's fair. Have you guys worked together before on any other projects aside from this?
Nope, we haven't.
Not me.
We're newbies, so that's our excuse.
Excellent. And so how did you guys connect initially?
Through PACT, yeah. So PACT. We've been doing stuff through PACT, and Katrina's like, I should hang out and, you know, maybe you can do some stuff together.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. And, you know, you both have very different artist practices. So how did that all collaborate together?
I'm a performer, so I know a bit about PAC because I was in a drama group called Wreckers. We did a show at PAC called Spear of Life, about our journey to Cambodia, and we came down back from Cambodia to Australia, performed our piece in PAC, and then I met James because I went to see his show at PAC too. So I thought I want to get along with this guy. He looks cool.
He's a good guy, isn't he?
He caught me on a good day.
Definitely a high five to that. So for The Wild Things, you mentioned monsters. How are we going to, like, see monsters in this show?
Well, I'm an artist, so I just draw random things. I like drawing faces, and I like monsters. So I draw all different type of monsters. And now I got this mentor of mine, and she said, let's just cut out these monsters as 3G kind of things. And we cut them out, and we thought, looks good, better than colouring in.
So, you know, when you hear of PAX Salon, it's usually a mixture of dance, a bit of art and performance. What are you guys bringing to this one?
So we just bring in some of our friends, and we just want it to have to be a party. And because PACT is a really experimental space, we kind of asked our friends to have fun and be experimental and have no pressure to perform perfect things. So we could be like monsters, and we could be naughty, and we could have fun.
Yeah.
I guess that's mostly it. Yeah.
That sounds like the most fun brief to give your mates.
Yeah, that's it.
I like that.
Now, just off air, you mentioned that you're going to be doing some painting as well. Can you talk about that?
Painting? Well, I was just saying, I'm an artist, and I done my own website.
Yep.
So I just do drawings every day in my studio, and then got myself involved with different things in my life and other things. I got like, besides I'm doing acting and drawing, I also am a filmmaker. So I do filmmaker stuff at Afters at Moore Park.
Yeah, and some of our friends are like doing performances with paint and ink and someone's doing glow-in-the-dark stuff.
Yeah, I love the glow-in-the-dark. It's cool.
When you say glow-in-the-dark, what do you mean?
I think it means some neon.
They're going to be painted neon?
Body paint.
Oh, body paint. Fun.
Can't get there.
Coming on in the body. Get there.
So, are we allowed to get, you know, get involved with the paint and all the dancing and all of that? Or is it more just observe?
So one of the artists, one of Digby's friends, he's going to do a special paint performance.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But I reckon, like, you know, as the night moves on, like, everyone's going to start dancing and getting involved. And, yeah, I'm sure that they can soil their, like, make their clothes dirty if they really want to.
Go crazy.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a bit more about the artists that you are involving in this project?
You go first, James.
Okay, so I've got some musicians, and they're making like little kind of like installations. So that's Kezia Yap and also Kieran Frame. There's also some live performance by Brooke Lee, a kind of like an endurance performance potentially with like Frozen Ink, which is kind of amazing. And like Loch Nguyen and Morris Quinn, and they're going to do kind of like body and live performances throughout the night. Yeah.
Ooh.
And Digby's.
Well, I got some things of my friends.
Yeah.
And we'll see. Some of my friends have disability, but they love to be wild.
Mm-hmm.
But the boy I mentioned you before, well, his name's Chris Bunton. He's a performer, an actor, and a teacher, and also the world champion gymnast.
Oh, wow.
With Down syndrome.
That's incredible.
So he just came back from Germany, and his parents are so happy for him. I'm happy for him as a friend. I didn't even know he got that far, so go do on him for that.
Yeah. We have a medalist.
Yeah,
you know, sure.
I don't really say that. Well, I got other friends got down to him too. His name's James Penny. He's a funny guy. He loves chapstick. He has written a story about a monster who lost his heart. And a friend, she's a mother.
Mm.
She works with people with disability in dramas. And she'll be part of this, but her daughter will be part of it.
Mm-hmm.
That's Brianna Harris. And she is the performer who plays for The Lost Heart. So she's playing with my friend James.
Oh, nice.
With it, so. Yeah, and then we got Rahul Handa. He's a dancer who performed with Handheld Video Project. Created by Martin Fox. So I don't even know Martin Fox, but I know him.
Mm-hmm.
He'd be a video camera person for my journey from Cambodia with me. So he's coming to bring this guy along to our show and be a part of it. So I'm happy with that. And then I also got another friend named Emily Das. He's a multimedia person, and she is a performer, and her poem is another friend.
Mm-hmm.
Georgia Cranko has a video installation, and Paris Dewhurst and Sunny are others and wanting performance, like be a part of the audience.
Yep.
And do performance in the audience. And then some of my artwork, I did some masks.
Yeah.
And they're going to hang it on that too, so.
Sounds like you have an amazing lineup of artists involved. Like a lot. So it should be really.
Well, not just me, but this guy.
Yeah, I know. Like the more people that are in there, the less work we have to do.
Is that how it works? I see how it is now. But you have described this as the biggest Bushdoof this side of Erskineville.
Hey, I knew it.
You,
Bushdoof.
That's it.
I mean, I wouldn't say Erskineville is a bush, but...
No, don't say it. Erko Bush.
Yeah. Oh, the Erko Bush.
Yeah, Erko Bush.
Where did that all come from?
I don't know.
I don't know. We just thought, you know, like if it's got to be a party and we've got to dance and have music and friends, we like... Closest thing's a Bushdoof.
Yeah. It's a Bushdoof. Way, man.
We're still marketing it, but.
It's a great marketing thing. Well, we can't wait to go and party with you in this wonderful Bushdoof known as the Wild Things. But Digby, James, thank you so much for joining us here today.
Oh, thank you very much.
We've just been speaking with Digby Webster, James Nguyen, and they will be at the PAX Salon, The Wild Things, which kicks off next Saturday at 6 p.m. at PACT in Erskineville. The Erko Bush on the 4th of August. Tickets are $15 online or $20 at the door. We'll put all those details up on our show page. Just head to So Hot Right Now on the 2SER website. I'm going to jump back into the music now. Here's one from the 7-Ups. It's called Brunswick Special.
Your vision come to life and train with the best at the National Institute of Dramatic Art. Pairing collaborative, practical training with valuable industry connections, NIDA offers studies in acting, musical theatre, costume, directing, production, makeup, design, scenic construction and more. Applications for Masters, Bachelor and Diploma courses are now open to start in 2019. Head to apply.nida.edu.au. NIDA sponsors 2SER 107.3.
never get rid of that trouble in your heart. Did you ever get rid of that trouble in your heart? Did you find a way to make it through the day? Did you ever get rid of that trouble in your heart? No. You're standing up straight, and I know the last few years ain't been great, but you'll make it through. You always do. It's so good to see that you're standing up straight. From this world, did you ever find what you needed from this world? You've been through hell, but you're alive. You're alive and well. Did you ever find what you needed from this world?
You're listening to So Hot Right Now, your weekly dose of arts and culture. That there was William Elliot Whitmore with Trouble in Your Heart. Bit of a blues tune there. And on top of that, you heard from a bit more of a jazzy breakdown from the 7-Ups with Brunswick Special. Now it's time for your pop culture fix with Tali Aladia.
To the Batmobile. Let's go. Atomic batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
Roger. Ready to move out.
Holy smokes, Batman. It's Gaggle of Geeks on 2SER.
Good morning, Tali Aladia.
Hello, Sophie Lai.
Welcome back to Gaggle of Geeks. It's been a little while.
It has. It feels like it's one of those things where it has just been a week. We just had a week off.
I had a week off.
But it feels like it's been months.
So long.
Yeah.
To be fair, a lot has happened in these 2 weeks that we haven't been on.
So much has happened. If anything, they went, let's do it all now. Yeah. And then just blow their minds.
I mean, we didn't even talk about a lot of things in the podcast, what happened last week, because we're like, it's old news now.
It's too far gone.
It's gone. We can't speak about it anymore.
It's like Harry Potter, like Voldemort, he who should not be named. Yeah. Is what happened in the... I don't know where I was going. As soon as I started, I was like, that makes sense. And I was like, no, it's not, because pop culture news is not the Dark Lord.
Isn't it?
And on that philosophical note...
big weekend, last weekend, I should say, because it was San Diego Comic-Con.
Is that like nerd nirvana?
Yeah, pretty much. Nerd Christmas.
Nerd Christmas?
Yeah. Mm. Just all the goodies in one place.
It's so convenient.
So convenient.
All the good things.
Yeah.
What was your favorite?
Probably seeing the Shazam trailer.
Oh, yeah?
I didn't expect to see it because I was like, because I've seen a few stills and it looks pretty funny. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that looks like it's going to be okay.
Yeah.
And then the trailer came out and I was like, this looks really fun and cheesy. Mm. I love cheese.
Well, if they're going to drop it anywhere, they're going to do it there, aren't they?
Yeah.
Like, let's be real.
So Comic-Con now is like, for anyone that's not Marvel or Disney,
yeah,
it's the place to still drop all your good content because Disney now do all theirs at D23.
Yeah.
So you've seen like Marvel like shift away from Comic-Con.
Oh.
So now everyone else is like, yes, this is our space.
This is our time to go do it. Yeah.
Like, we don't need to worry about them. And,
yeah.
Like, you can actually take more space there. So
yeah.
Yeah. So DC had quite a big presence. So Shazam, starring Zachary Levi, 3-minute trailer. Looks hilarious. It's like, remember that Tom Hanks movie Big?
Yes.
So it's that superimposed with superheroics.
What a joy.
What a joy.
That is all the good things.
Considering how like DC, like if you look at Justice League, that awful, awful movie, it was so bad. And Batman v Superman and just in general, all the Supermans, they're all so dark.
Yeah.
And this just was just fun. And like the kids looked like they were having fun in it and they were just taking the piss a bit. So it was kind of nice.
Do you think that superhero movies are moving towards a more comedic light kind of take on what's happening? Because they were like, you do remember a lot of them, lot of Batmans, which were really dark and moody.
Well, the Chris Nolan one started that whole, I'm Batman and I'm going to be really dark and dark.
And there is no sun in Gotham City. Like nothing is ever happy and good.
And then everyone's like, that's a winning formula. We're going to, everyone's going to go dark.
Because it was like even Superman's like costume went darker as well to like, you know, as the homage to everything be darker. And but now
now everyone's like, okay, that's very dark, a bit too dark. Well, I think that's the thing about a lot of Marvel movies. They've got that balance between levity and seriousness.
Yep. And the light and shade.
Yeah. And DC is still figuring it out. And it looks like they're finally starting to get it. Just like, 10 years down the track.
Yeah. It's all right. As long as they're there now, it's all fine.
Yeah. But the thing is, they also put out a trailer for Titans, which is a new TV series based on, I think, like the Outsiders / Titans era. Teen Titans. And it is super, super dark.
They obviously didn't get the memo.
The TV didn't get the memo because it's super dark and everyone's like, well, this is just lame. And it has an Aussie boy in it, Brendan Thwaites.
It must be so nerve-wracking, I would imagine, for these producers and things like that to show their trailers in front of a live audience too and just be like, because I guess that's their first real reaction of what the crowd is going to want and what the audience is going to be to it. So can you imagine if they do Shazam, it's really light and funny, and everyone's like, no. No. Like, what do they do? And do they just go back to post-production and just be like, okay, make...
I guess that's what they've been doing with all the X-Men movies.
Everything. Make it darker. Change everything. No laughing. Cut every laughter scene out.
But it's funny because they've actually been doing that a lot with a lot of films where they've gone, make it funnier. It's too dark. Make it funnier. Go back to the... like post and make it funnier.
Yeah, put some scenes into it.
I mean,
that's
what they did with Justice League. They got on Joss Whedon to make it a bit more light.
Yeah, man.
So,
It must be that thing of getting the reaction because, like, Jodie Whittaker kind of did her first female Doctor Who.
Yeah.
It really annoys me that I keep saying female Doctor Who. She's now just Doctor Who. I don't have to keep saying that she's
a woman. Now the Doctor, but she is the first woman Doctor.
Mm.
I mean, after 13 men.
Yeah, it's about time.
It's about time.
It's about time, guys. But it was her first real appearance as the Doctor, apart from that, like, you know, like some of the short little snippets of her, like kind of running around in the forest. That's what I just remember her in a coat, just kind of running around.
Yeah,
in the
I think that was the first look.
Yeah.
Just to show off the costume.
Yeah.
Was that. But yeah, now she's her first actual
interaction with fans to see it. It is real.
And it's so sweet.
It's so nice. It's so nice.
Everyone's like, what do you want people to feel like when they see you? She's like, it's okay to look up to women. You're like, yes!
And then I think I saw it was a picture that she had with a very young girl Doctor Who fan who was dressed up. And you're just like, that's why representation matters.
Mm.
It's just like yes, this little girl may have dressed up as the Doctor regardless, but there might be a thing where it's a little bit more aspirational.
Because, yeah, it was back when everyone would dress up as one of the companions. I'm not saying the companions aren't bad, but they were never the Doctor.
Exactly. Like, no offense, like Billie Piper.
She was great.
Catherine Tate.
Oh, she was brilliant.
I did love Catherine Tate. She does, I think everything that she touches is gold.
It really is.
She's coming to Sydney at the end of the year.
Oh, how exciting.
For a Catherine Tate live show. Just, I'm very excited for that. Just her ability to go so many characters that are so memorable. Like
Amist, I'm bothered.
Am I bothered?
Is this face bothered?
Yeah. Bothered. Me. Bothered. No. Bothered. No. I love it. There are so many lines where it's just like, it's just so funny. There was something like, is are we your flock? Like, because the teacher, there was one scene where she just decided her teacher was super religious. She's like, is Jesus your saviour, miss? Are we your flock, miss? I was just like, are we your flock? I don't know why, but I just love that so much.
Well, that's the thing. When people do say, these are my flock, I'm like, well, we are sheep. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. 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 Oh, good times. Good times. Yeah. What else happened at Comic-Con? The funny thing, Johnny Depp, like there was a bit of controversy there.
Yeah. So for the WB panel, which also looks after Aquaman.
Always going to be controversial considering Amber Heard, his ex-wife,
is in
Aquaman.
Yeah, so that was a great trailer. But they kind of did their panel, went off, and then they got the Fantastic Beast panel to come on.
Yeah.
Which Johnny Depp had an awkward appearance in character as Gellert Grindelwald, which, there was booze?
Yeah, well, from what I heard, there were boos when they played the trailer at first and people saw Johnny Depp, because obviously Johnny Depp is in our bad books. Mm-hmm. So there was a lot of booing, and then he surprised the booing crowd by coming out in character. And I had heard reports that the fans, like some of them obviously still booed him, but they were saying, oh no, generally the fans were very excited that he was there. And it was just like,
you read the reports and it's very mixed.
I don't think that they just forgot what happened, or maybe. No. Yeah.
Many fans were slamming, saying, I can't believe you brought up Johnny Depp just minutes after Amber Heard. It's so irresponsible.
Yeah. Because they probably would have been waiting in the wings near each other.
Of course. They would have passed each other in the hallways. Yeah.
It's small. They're going to the same stage. It's not like different areas and whatnot.
Yeah. So much for me too there. Hey.
Yeah, guys. Come on. Yeah. Ah, Comic-Con.
Yeah. So that was. But when you watch a trailer, it was actually a good trailer.
Yeah.
But then he came on and he's like,
And that's
bad taste in your mouth.
Yeah. And it's one of the weird critiques, because at the same time, you're like, I don't support Johnny Depp being in this movie. But then the truth is, you still will go and see the movie, and they're still getting, like, you know, butts on seats and box office dollars. So, like, it's one of those things, I think, as people, if we were better and we all came together and went, actually, we really don't want Johnny Depp in this, no one's going. Like, let's boycott this film. That would probably send a message. But until then, the reality is that they're going to keep...
So wrong.
So wrong, guys. So wrong.
Comic-Con, eh?
Yeah.
All the things.
I cannot wait to see what happens then next year. Because surely they just get bigger and better every year, don't they?
Well, yeah. I mean, the thing I'm interested in seeing the next D23 to see what all Marvel's going to be like. Oh. We're going to do all of this. And then DC and every other property is like, we'll show you at San Diego Comic-Con. we'll show you.
It's like compare and contrast, isn't it?
It totally is.
Someone's there taking notes religiously. You won that round. You won that round. Yeah. This was the point here.
And
you
everyone else is like, he's not what to do when you have someone like Johnny Depp on the stage.
Exactly. Things to learn from.
Yeah, things to learn from. New column. Had to add it this year. We'll call it hashtag me too.
Hashtag mistakes not to make again.
Mm-hmm.
Hashtag things that were bloody obvious that we missed. Hashtag things that we'll fire an intern for. We'll blame an intern for it.
Always blame the intern.
Yeah. Sort it out.
Well, if you want to hear us gaggle more, there is the podcast. But Tali, Thank you. We'll catch you next week for more gaggling.
We will indeed. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
The wonderful Tali Alatia there. Look her up on Twitter for all her very interesting thoughts as well as pop culture news alerts. If you want to join the conversation, just use the hashtag GaggleOfGeeks or tag us at 2SER and join the geeky conversation. And of course, listen to the hour-long podcast because we've always got plenty to talk about. Coming up, though, we're going to be talking about some musical drama that's a little controversial. But to get you there, here's one from Riley Walker. It's All Kinds of You. Walker there with All Kinds of You. You're here on It's So Hot Right Now with me, Sophie Lime. Are you, has art been politicized? Is the Western canon still valid? And are political ideologies making people vile? Tyranno is a new musical drama labeled as dark, topical, humorous, and brutal all in one, and challenges all of these controversial questions. The show will be brought to its audience early next month, where themes of Western art, free speech, and offensive language will be explored, and the authority of societal power and innate beliefs will be questioned. Producer Laura Mazzatelli chatted with Coco Granger and Ludwig van Distortion, who are the co-writers, producers, and directors of this emotive musical performance.
So first of all, Coco, can you briefly tell me about the plotline of this epic musical drama?
Well, this drama, Tyranno, is about a controversial speaker giving a talk at a university, and the students and professors want to shut him down because they think that he's spreading hate speech. And it's sort of this tug and war of ideologies.
Interesting. And what was the casting process like?
Casting was interesting. We mainly work with a lot of our main sort of players. We work with the same sort of people.
And, yeah, I think 5 out of the 9 are people we've worked with before.
Can you tell us a bit about the protagonist of the story?
He is an internet troll, I guess, in the sense that he's merciless when he fights his enemies. But he's also based on Harold Bloom and Kenneth Clark, Joseph Campbell, all these old guys. I sort of imagined what would they be like if they were young, fiery internet personalities today, sort of fighting against what they perceive to be the enemies of art.
Interesting. Now, Coco, before we delve deeper into the plotline details of your show, in terms of musical production, how have you and Ludwig brought this show to life?
We basically sort of put the things we love in the show, and the way we sort of brought this to life was we started with the story. Before, I know a lot of people might read into the politics of this, but we basically started with the story, and we thought it was kind of interesting, the sort of ballet playing out of these sort of two sort of groups, the left and the right, and we just thought it was really interesting. So it was story first, and then we sort of imbued like our sort of music to it, like the stuff, I think it was like all these sort of classical sort of structures. I think it's like it's in sonata form, the music.
A lot of it, yeah.
Yeah, it reads sort of like
it's all our favorite stuff, like Beethoven-style music with noisy guitars.
Like shoegaze.
It's a fairly classical structure as a drama.
Yeah.
We did tons of rewrites. It's the first time we've ever actually like done a second and a third draft of the show and got notes from the actors. It's been really collaborative and good.
Oh, so you've got help from the actors too?
Yeah, we showed the first five on board. We showed a second draft, and some of them were social justice warriors. We were so worried what they were going to think, but they said, no, it's good, and we got notes from them.
They told us to make it more offensive, so we were like, okay.
So you got the okay from the cast members. Oh, awesome.
Yeah, we got a lot of good notes from them.
Yeah.
Wrote a third draft, which means it was late to rehearsal, which they were all stressing about.
I know. Like, but I think we started rehearsing, like, maybe 3 weeks into music rehearsals, and we still hadn't gotten a finished script yet, so...
But it was worth it.
Yeah, like...
Just on that note, what has it been like not only writing but producing and directing a show?
It has been stressful, hard, difficult, but also really good. Like, just the avenues that it opens up for us. Like, we meet different people, and also I guess it gives us a clearer idea of where we want to take what we do compared to everybody else. Like, I think we sort of run everything like a... what do you call it, like a band?
We're not from the theatre world. Like, we met going to gigs and stuff, and so we know music and I guess, like, we know stories, like, from films and stuff, but in terms of theatre craft, we rely a lot on the actors because we don't really know what we're doing.
Yeah, that's true. But we're getting better.
Before you said that, use the word offensive. I remember when I was watching your teaser trailer, I saw that it said it's the most offensive musical since Cats. Can you expand on that one?
One of our cast members who's been in Cats. So
oh, really?
It's a kind of in-joke against him. And yeah, I think in the show we make fun of Chicago, a whole litany of musicals that he's actually been in.
But... you know, we're good. We're cool.
Now, Ludwig, you and Coco question the nature of art being politicized and whether or not ideologies make people vile. Now, these are some seriously big questions. So what was it that brought you to exploring these through a musical drama and without spoiling anything, of course? How have you done so?
I think I wanted to put it in because I just see a lot of it now in debates where people, you know, people on the left will make a point as a generalization and the right will say, what about this? And then the right do the exact same thing where they make a generalization and the left, it's this kind of holier-than-thou attitude where people just start out as enemies. They don't really listen to one another. And I thought musical theater is actually a good medium because you can have people singing over the top of one another, unlike what you can do in a play or a film. Because there's music, that's fine. And we toned a lot of that down in the end, but that was one of the original ideas, just to show how people really don't listen anymore.
Yeah, we had fun with the music and playing around with the form in that aspect.
Oh, interesting. So you were saying, like, kind of the shunning away sort of from the political to be more expressive in an art world. Is that what you're aiming for with this show?
Yeah, I think so. I think our concern was if we kind of made it topical and, you know, for this particular period, it would be a period piece. We kind of, at the time, we were like reading Hamlet and like Shakespeare, and we were thinking, how do we make this sort of like a timeless story? And I think if we had done it sort of like with identity politics and things like that, it would have been maybe topical, but then maybe in a year or two, it would be dated. So we thought...
It was also to tone down how unpleasant. I think a show that was like... about all the current political issues, it would just be like an episode of Q&A. It would be awful.
Yeah.
If we thought if we make it about art, it kind of I don't know, sugarcoats it or something. But it's still the same basic argument, left-wing students versus the right-wing commentator or whatever.
And I think because we're both are big art lovers, like it's something that we really want to preserve.
We just wanted to show the two sides. The audience can really think for themselves. I imagine half the audience will cheer Tirano and half the audience will cheer the student who gets to debate him is called Grazia. And I think in Act 2, she really gets some good points in this and people will like her, like half the audience will.
Can you tell me about Grazia a bit more?
She's sort of like a militant feminist who sort of leads this sort of a group of students, and she's their spokesperson. She's basically the antithesis of Tirano.
That'd create some interesting conflict then, wouldn't it?
Yeah. But I think she and the students sing some of the most beautiful music in Act 2, so... And I think Tirano is the most eloquent, so we tried to be diplomatic, I guess.
What types of musical forms are you playing with in the show?
The whole show is just six big songs. So, like two of them are well over half an hour long, so they were fun to learn. But I guess the style is kind of like dark wall of sound kind of stuff.
But deeply Wagnerian.
And humorous, of course, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Wagner with jokes.
But not as long, because I don't think anyone wants to sit through 16 hours of this.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That there was producer Laura Mazzatelli chatting with Coco Granger and Ludwig van Distortion, the co-writers, producers and directors of their up-and-coming musical drama, Tirano. Tirano is hitting 104 Erskineville Town Hall from the 3rd to the 18th of August. So to be sure to snatch up some tickets while you can, we'll put all those details up on our website. Just look up 2ser.com and hit the So Hot Right Now tab. We're going to jump back into the music before we talk about some classical music. This one's from Waxahachie. It's called Under a Rock.
Baby, you got head cut in a ditch last night. I got to you in parting. Now you're someone else's mess tonight. And I got upset. I told you twice that I know how to break inside the brick house that you built around your crater. You wear it like
see the best of contemporary art, design and social inquiry at UTS Gallery. From July 24 to September 14, check out Hello World, Code and Design, curated by Aaron Seymour. Watch 22 designers hacking everyday objects and fashion. There's even a 3D printed gun. Hello World reveals the impact of code on our society. Head to art.uts.edu.au for more info. UTS Art, a space for art and ideas. Sponsors of 2SER.
You're listening to So Hot Right Now, your weekly dose of arts and culture. Lazy Sundays are the best, and what better way to enjoy some chill weekend vibes with a classical serenade from the Sydney Symphony Orchestra at the Cashula Powerhouse, playing a selection ranging from the classics of Mozart's and Brahms to Schulhoff's more jazzy rhythms and beats. The concert will be performed by some of Australia's youngest and brightest upcoming orchestral stars. And joining us to tell you more about Sunday Serenade is musicians Magdalena and Toby. Hello.
Hi.
Hey.
How are you going?
Well, thanks. Thanks for having us.
Not a problem. So how did Sunday Serenade all come about for you guys?
So, as you said, we are two of the group of 13 fellows with the Sydney Symphony Orchestra, and we do, as part of our fellowship, a variety of sort of chamber music and small ensemble concerts throughout the year. And, yeah, this is one of the ones coming up for us.
Excellent. And, you know, what instruments are you playing on the day?
So I play violin.
And I'm a clarinetist.
Excellent. And what kind of tunes can we expect on the day?
So we've got quite a cool variety, actually, yeah, for this program. We've got three pieces. There's the Brahms Serenade, Mozart's Oboe Quartet, and a suite for chamber orchestra by Schulhoff. And they're all very different. As you said, we've got quite a big range, going from like really classical kind of stuff from Mozart to much more sort of kooky and modern stuff in the Schulhoff, which is a bit more jazzy. So yeah, it's quite a cool range of all really fun music.
Yeah, and also the cool thing about it is the difference in how many people play in each piece. So as Toby said, we've got a Mozart quartet, which is for small ensemble, obviously, and the others utilize most of the fellows. The Brahms Serenade is much bigger, so it's a super different sound world in each piece, even in terms of the amount of instruments playing.
Mm. I mean, you guys are quite young, so how is it like playing classical music to a place like the Cashula Powerhouse Arts Centre, which is quite an interesting, edgy arts kind of centre, I would say.
It's a really fun thing to do, actually. I love playing in spaces that wouldn't necessarily usually host classical music. It's awesome on a few levels. Firstly, you have a different acoustic to play in, and it's nice being out of the concert hall sometimes. Just as a musician, you get used to being flexible and playing in different spaces. And also, it means that often you get to perform to audiences that may not necessarily usually come to classical music concerts. They might not particularly know what it's like or enjoy sitting in a concert hall, but then in a space like this, it can make it more accessible and also show people that classical music is actually a really cool experience.
I'm taking on that because, like, you know, when you think of classical music, you think, oh, that's something grandma might listen to. How do you kind of make that kind of more contemporary connection with audiences?
I think the biggest thing is loving it yourself first. And what I love about classical music is the variety of it, the breadth of types of music. People, I think that lots of people my age that I talk to that don't know much about it, should say, oh, classical music, you know, it can be quite boring and it all, you know, it kind of is very relaxing and it puts you to sleep. Well, that is so not true. Just every single time period has had so many different composers and different sound worlds, and some of it, yes, is relaxing and beautiful. Other bits make you want to dance, other things make you want to cry, other things just make you feel a lot of stuff and you don't really know what you're feeling, but it's super intense and it takes you on this big journey, you know. And honestly, it's like that. And even, you know, the stuff we're playing on the weekend, the Brahms Serenade has some beautiful lush melodies, and it goes from, then has some moments of darkness and suddenly it's light and jolly, whereas the Schulhoff piece is one movement is a tango movement, so quite sexy and free, and another one is a jazzy movement. And anyway,
I mean, to follow on from what Men are saying, the word sort of classical music is a huge generalization. I mean, even just talking about the music that we're playing in this upcoming concert, it's music from like three different centuries, you know, so there's really something for everyone. Even if you don't like a particular part of classical music, or you think Mozart is sometimes a little bit boring, you know, maybe you'll like the Schulhoff piece, which is much more jazzy. So, you know, there's so much different music, which with different instrumentation and different characters and everything, that to say you don't like classical music is such a generalization. And I'm sure that anyone could find some really fantastic music that they like.
I mean, as you mentioned, it's a huge, like, three centuries worth of music. How do we, like, kind of categorize in just, oh, it's just classical, broadly speaking, since, you know, there's such different styles within the genre.
I think the first thing to do is just to listen to stuff, and watch concerts and go on YouTube and just when you can, I guess it's break the surface and just delve in and see what you like. And even on Spotify, just go on shuffle. That's what I do, to be honest, sometimes. Just on the train, I'll just be listening to one thing and then the next thing comes on. I think, oh, this is cool. What's this? So, yeah, I guess just look out for what you might like, I think.
Yeah, I mean, Mena and I are both, you know, young professional musicians, but I think I speak for both of us when I say there's so much that we haven't even discovered.
Definitely.
You know, we've barely broken the surface of what, you know, the repertoire and the music that's out there, and it's so exciting for us still to, like, go out and find new stuff. You know, there's such a breadth of music.
Absolutely.
from the, you know, last 500 years and beyond. So, you know, it's exciting for a listener and a performer to just sort of go on that journey and find what you like and explore all different kinds of music.
Yeah, actually, even for me, I'm performing in the Brahms Serenade and the Schulhof Suite for Chamber Orchestra. I hadn't even heard either of them before preparing for this concert. You know, so even in, as a performer, as Toby said, you're constantly discovering new things and delving into new worlds.
And do you have like a new favourite to play since discovering some more new?
Oh, there's always favourites. I think for me and probably Mena as well, it's like constantly shifting. You know, it depends what you're playing every week. And, you know, this year we've been playing a whole bunch of different repertoire with the orchestra and also with the fellows. Mm. For me personally, at the moment, I love playing in like a larger orchestral setting stuff by composers at the sort of turn of the 20th century, like Mahler or Strauss. You know, these are guys who were writing fantastic music which uses massive orchestras, and that kind of stuff is really fun to play in for me. So that's a favourite for me at the moment.
Mm. I recently, we recently performed Mendelssohn's Fifth Symphony in the orchestra, the Reformation Symphony, which I hadn't played before and didn't know very well, and I really loved that and found it super different to his earlier symphonies, which I know. So I really enjoyed that.
Excellent. And how has been your experience with the Sydney Symphony Fellowship?
Absolutely fantastic. It's such a brilliant training program. As Toby said, we've performed with the orchestra throughout the year. So each of the fellows will perform a certain number of concerts side by side with the members of the orchestra. And we're also performing these chamber concerts, and throughout the year have participated in the SSO education program as well, so performing schools concerts, and we went on a regional tour to take classical music to smaller places, and all of it has been fantastic and a huge learning experience, great opportunity.
Fantastic. Well, we can't wait to see you next weekend at the Kashula Powerhouse. But Toby and Magdalena, thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thanks for having
us. My pleasure. Thank you.
You can catch them performing at Sunday Serenade at the Kashula Powerhouse next Sunday, not this Sunday, but next Sunday. We'll put all those details up on 2ser.com. My time here is just about up. So big thanks to all our guests today. I'll leave you with a bit of Joey's Coop with Take Me Away. Till next time. Bye.